You're listening to SpursCast, episode 602. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Benjamin Bornstein. In this episode, Ben and I will discuss the Spurs and their last two games since returning from All-Star break, the team mutually agreeing to part ways with LaMarcus Aldridge, and the Spurs' dominant play against the Eastern Conference this season. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode. Ben, how are you doing?
I am great, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, you and I just want to make sure we put a timestamp here. You and I are recording this on Saturday morning. So again, it's Saturday morning that we're pulling all this data and the state of the Spurs. So let's first discuss, Ben, the state of the Spurs and how they're performing. You know, they've only played two games since returning from All-Star break this past week. So Wednesday, they returned with a loss by 11 to the Dallas Mavericks. It was pretty close for the first three quarters. Then in the fourth, the Spurs kind of just went cold there on offense. They couldn't get a bucket to fall. And Dallas ended up also, you know, wreaking havoc on the boards. Kristaps Porzingis was a big issue for the Spurs there on defense. And Dallas secured 13 offensive rebounds. So Dallas ended up with the 11-point win on Wednesday. Then on Friday, the Spurs had a dominant win against the Orlando Magic. Actually, it's the Spurs' best win of the season in terms of point margin, which we just talked about that a few weeks ago on the SpursCast when they beat the Knicks by 26 points recently. Anyway, so some background on this game. There was no DeMar DeRozan for this game. He was out attending the funeral for his father who passed away recently. So the Spurs were without DeMar, but the Orlando Magic were actually missing a bunch of players as well. They were missing eight players total. The Spurs were favored by seven, and the Spurs had two of their best defensive quarters of the season, where they held the Magic to 10 points in the second quarter, which is actually the best defensive quarter overall this season. And then also in the fourth quarter, they held the Magic to 13 points. And like I said, they led by as many as 29. I know that in the first quarter, the Spurs kind of stalled out early on, but then they pretty much dominated the rest of the game. So overall, the Spurs are 19-15, seventh out West and 20th on offense, and now ninth on defense after this monster performance against Orlando. And actually, when you take out garbage time, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Spurs are actually the fourth best defense in the league. So what do you want to say about their return since All-Star break and what you've seen?
So obviously the game last night, game Friday night, was one they absolutely should have won. And frankly, I think giving them 7 points wasn't enough. And obviously it turned out to be that way. But, you know, Orlando missing eight players. It doesn't matter who else San Antonio was missing that night. They should have mollywopped them just like they did. So they did exactly what they were supposed to do. The Mavericks have been playing much better the last few weeks, so it's understandable to lose that game. The Spurs will have to do better than hover around 500 the rest of the season if they want to get into the playoffs, I think. Or I should rephrase, if they want to be a top eight seed, because the 9 and 10s are getting playing games. So if they want to be a top eight seed in the playoffs, they have to be better than 500 the rest of the season, I think. And I know you and I are going to talk about this a little later in the podcast, but they have a favorable schedule for that coming up, despite the back-to-backs that they're going to have to endure. So I think with the Spurs, when DeMar DeRozan comes back, whenever he decides to do that, I think they're going to end up being a much better offensive team, because that will not force Patty Mills to be a true point guard at times, when the offense tends to stall when Patty Mills is the guy you're relying on to make plays for your team. And obviously you can't play DeJounte Murray every single minute of every single game. So they have to either find someone else to do it, or they need DeMar DeRozan back. And I think with Derek White returning, getting his legs under him, I think he will end up being that guy as well. So they should be fine. They just have to make sure that they try to avoid those droughts in games where the ball doesn't move as well as it should. It sticks. You get guys caught with the ball who shouldn't be trying to create shots, or who shouldn't be trying to create plays for other people. But I think that problem is going to be solved now that the COVID issues are past this team, and they're going to need everybody on that bench too, because of all the back-to-backs they're playing. There's going to be, you know, load restrictions, load management, whatever you want to call it. There's going to be plenty of that down the stretch of this second half of the season.
Yeah, and 2 points I want to make there, kind of piggybacking off what you just said there was, you know, it was good to see that, you know, Rudy Gay, Devin Vassell, and Derek White all played well in this game, considering that these are the three players that are returning from their, having COVID just a few weeks ago. And especially Derek, because, you know, he did have it took him a little bit of time. He even talked about it, you know, getting his legs back under him and just kind of getting that feel for the game back after playing against Dallas recently. And then Rudy Gay said the same thing. Pop said that that his legs kind of disappeared in the second half against the Mavericks there. And again, it's understandable. They hadn't played in over pretty much almost 2 weeks of basketball. And then Devin just comes right out and makes two threes so quickly in the third quarter against Orlando. So again, that's a good sign. Again, if they're starting to get back to full health, those players that were out due to COVID. And obviously we don't know exactly when DeMar's coming back. He could come back against Philly, or it could be even later. It just depends, because of, you know, even though he's out for personal family reasons, but you know, it takes a while because the protocols to get back into a lineup. So again, we'll kind of monitor when DeMar returns. And then there was another point I was going to make, but I completely forgot what it was. It was something
So anyway. To piggyback off a little bit of that, it was nice to see Devin Vassell and Trey Jones and even Luka Šamanić got some time, because the margin was so wide. You know, they got some good run in last night. So I think if Coach Pop can find time for them in other games like that, whether it's, you know, if it's a blowout one way or another, I think that'll be good opportunities for them. And I think Trey Jones got screwed a little bit, because I don't see him getting a whole lot more time, even with load management coming up. They really brought him up because he had because they had those COVID issues and mm-hmm. he was available. So it stinks, because there's no more G League season. It's over.
Yeah.
And there's really nowhere else for him to go. So hopefully he can learn some things on the bench, absorb there, and be able to use it next year. And of course, depending on the guard situation and depending on what happens in free agency, hopefully he can carve out a role and find some minutes.
Yeah, that was actually the second point. It was actually what you just said there. So it was the depth now, like those games that, you know, that the players had to step up, you know, Keita Bates' job, Trey Jones, Luka Šamanić, who's the other guy, Trey Lyles, all those, you know, that a lot, some of those guys were playing 15 minutes a night for like four or five games here. And so now all of a sudden you see that when DeMar's out, Trey Lyles can easily step in and, you know, start for Pop and give him, you know, 20 minutes if he needs to. When the Spurs are up by, like you mentioned, 20 plus points, Pop can securely feel that he can put in some of those end of the bench players, and they can hold that lead for those last 4 minutes. Cause remember that a few weeks ago when they played Atlanta, where they almost like, they gave up, like, I remember they were up by 42 in that game, but they barely won by like 11 overall. Because the bench unit,
third string, brutal.
Yeah, so like that's the thing, is like, you know, if it's a back to back and they need to rest players or something, or if they have a good comfortable margin, Pop can put those players in the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game to make sure that the starters and the top nine basically don't have to use all their legs and all and for the full 48 minutes of these games. So again, those are some points that we both spoke about there. All right, Ben, let's go ahead and move on to the second news here. You know, this is some kind of breaking news. It was very awkward on Wednesday. What happened was, you know, right before we were waiting for Coach Pop online on the Zoom call. And then before he comes in, the Spurs announced that LaMarcus Aldridge would be out. And they just said, you know, he's not. And the reason why was he didn't have an injury. He was just not with the team. And we were like, it was like minutes before Pop came on. Then, of course, we asked Pop about that. And he did say that, you know, because of, you know, the situations the Spurs are in where they're ready to they and LaMarcus agreed that they were going to mutually agree to part ways. Now, Pop didn't define what that means, whether it's trade or buyout, but, you know, those are the only two options the Spurs have in terms of moving on from Aldridge. So then right after Pop's interview, and we basically knew that the Spurs and Aldridge are moving on, Woj, of course, broke some news where he says that the Spurs are working on trades on several fronts. He said that a trade could be found within the week, so maybe it comes before Wednesday this week, if that's going to hold. And then he also said at the moment there's no movement toward a buyout, but we know that if they can't get a trade done within these next 12 days, which the deadline is on the 25th of March, then they would have to seek a buyout. Now, there hasn't been any reputable sourcing here. You know, there's a lot of teams coming out if Aldridge gets bought out, you know, teams like Portland, like the Lakers, et cetera. There's different names, Philly's out there as well. But as far as teams that are looking to trade for him, the only reputable source I found so far, again, that you and I were recording this on Saturday morning, is Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald reported that the Heat have expressed interest in Aldridge, but actually because of the difficulty in a trade for Aldridge at the moment, Right now, they actually have more interest in Rudy Gay. So again, there hasn't been a lot of reporting on who's exactly interested in Aldridge in terms of trades. So some of the big challenges, though, of moving him, is that his salary is $24 million. So that's pretty tough to move a player at $24 million who was coming off the bench, who wasn't even playing well with his own team, was a liability on defense is what we saw there. So some other complications why it's hard to move Aldridge is because they only have one extra roster spot to Spurs. Right now, they're at 14 guaranteed contracts. And then they have, of course, the two G League players, but the difficulty means that if you're putting a trade together for Aldridge, and let's say you send LaMarcus somewhere, well, then you can only bring back two players at minimum. If you bring back more than two players, then you have to either waive someone, probably Drew Eubanks, because he's making the least amount of money on this team in terms of the long term players, and that's difficult because Eubanks is actually playing very well for them when he gives them minutes, or you have to get a third team involved to try to move one of those extra players coming to the Spurs to that third team, and the reason why that's difficult is because if most teams are above the salary cap at this moment, and in order to create any kind of trade for LaMarcus, if you're over the salary cap, you have to at least build $19 million in salary. And that's tough because that usually takes about three players to do that. Some teams can do it with two players, but most teams, it takes at least three players to build a package of $19 million for Aldridge. Now, since I mentioned the Heat, Bobby Marks, made a video where he recently, just talked about all the complications with this. And one package he put together, which is obviously very difficult, is maybe a player like Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and Maurice Harkless for Aldridge. This is a 3-for-1 swap. This is tough because then, the Spurs would either have to waive a player to bring in those three players, or they'd have to trade someone to make this happen or get a third team involved. So let's first focus on this Heat rumor and just kind of your thoughts on this whole Aldridge situation, and then we'll continue talking about some other teams.
Aldridge is tough, especially because of that salary you mentioned. It's such a large number for one player. It's the last year of his deal. Nobody's going to want to really rent that salary for half a year and then figure out what they're going to do with them. Because if you trade for him, that means you wanted him, and he's probably going to ask for a little more money than if he was just on the free agent market. And he's worth maybe half of his current salary right now per year. Like you said, he is not a good defender at this stage in his career. He should not be asked to be the first or second option on a team unless it's your first option on a bench squad, in which case he might thrive. And I think he would be really great because he's feasting on other people's bench guys. And he's kind of in between being a starter and being a second unit person. So you really have to consider, I think teams that are considering trading for him really have to think about, is it worth it for us this season? Is he the piece that's going to put us over? If we're really competing for a championship this year, maybe it makes sense. But if you're not competing for a championship, it doesn't really make sense for your team. And frankly, that's a lot of teams. There's maybe three or four legitimate contenders this year, and some of them don't have the space to do that, or they don't, they're not going to want to match the salary so that they can clear the space for him, because then they're giving up pieces they like. So you've really run into a problem here. And the more that I've looked at it and the more that I've thought about it, I'm starting to think that this is going to end up being a buyout between the Spurs and LaMarcus Aldridge. And then he gets picked up by whoever for the rest of the season. And then the Spurs just have the salary come off their books this summer like they would have anyway. And they've now cleared all that cap space for the summer. I think it's $48 million supposed to have. They're projected to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're the Spurs, you don't really want to buy out because you'd like to get something in return for Aldridge. Really, no matter even what it is, because frankly, getting his salary off your books is the favor that a team is doing you rather than really receiving any sort of asset in return, whether it's a pick or players. Although if the Spurs can squeeze out a couple of picks, maybe a future first on a non-lottery team or a couple of second rounders from a team, and they get rid of the salary, that's probably a win.
Yeah, so like that's a tough thing you kind of just brought up, is like, how do the other teams evaluate him? Because I feel like there might be some teams that are desperate to get in, like teams that have been out of the playoffs for multiple years. I feel like they might be just desperate to get a player where they think they can give Aldridge an expanded role, keep him as a starter, and we see that he just doesn't work out as a third or fourth option on offense these days. I know he's expanded his game out to the 3-point line. I know he still does the pick and pop mid-ranger, but like in terms of like if you make him your first or second option, we see that he just wants to post up, and a lot of those are just those turnaround over the shoulder type of shots. He doesn't really get to the free throw line these days. He doesn't really score a lot in the paint. His number of paint shots are very low, and so that's one part, is like how do these teams evaluate him? I agree with you that if it's a team who's trying to chase a championship, well then they're going to tell him right immediately, you're probably going to come off the bench, and that's going to be it. You're only going to be allowed to score against second units, because these teams don't want to lose anything on defense if they're already trying to compete for a championship. They know that any team that's getting Aldridge, they know that he's really just slipped defensively, and that's one of the key reasons why the Spurs have decided to move on from him, because Jakob Poeltl is just so much better. Even Drew Eubanks as well as an option there. So I think that's the big question. I think that if he does get moved, it's going to be to a team that is actually really desperate to at least just get into the playoffs. If they think that, hey, we can make LaMarcus our second or third option here, keep him as a starter, kind of what he was comfortable doing, then maybe that's that team. There's a team out there. Now, as far as, I know that the $24 million is really difficult to move because of all the things we talked about, but there are some teams out there, who can kind of make him fit pretty quickly. And those are, so one team to mention is Boston. I know that right now it doesn't look like they have an interest in him just because, they have multiple bigs already. They have Tristan Thompson. They have Robert Williams. They have, I forgot there was one other player they have. Oh, Tice.
Daniel Tice.
Yeah. And a lot of those players, defensively just fit so much better than Aldridge. And so the Celtics, the reason why I mentioned them is because they do have this $28.5 million trade exception, which means that they could basically trade for Aldridge and fit him into that exception. Now, what that would do for Boston is two issues. They would put them in the tax, which do they want to pay that just for, an Aldridge, Aldridge, a player who like we just mentioned all the issues that he's going to bring for them. And then two is, they'd also have to waive two players because they are hard caps. So like they can't quite just make it so easy as, oh, let's just trade for LaMarcus. They actually have to waive two players. Then another team to keep in mind is the Thunder. They have a big trade exception as well, $27.5 million, I believe. Wow. And again, that can just fit LaMarcus in quickly at his $24 million. But then OKC in that terms is OKC desperate to try to chase a playoff spot? So then maybe they make Aldridge one of their core pieces, starting like alongside SGA and Lou Dort. Or are they just doing this to try to get an asset from the Spurs, where they're telling the Spurs, hey, we'll take LaMarcus. Yeah, we can trade for him, but we want like a second round pick or something. We want some sort of future asset. And so
right, we're doing you a favor by
exactly
taking him off your hands. Give us something else.
So yes, yeah, so like then all of a sudden, okay, well then why would the Spurs do that? Might as well just buy him out, and then right. They keep their cap space, they keep their picks in the future. Go ahead.
And the other thing with OKC is they just traded away Hamadou Diallo. So how much are they really willing to buy? Are they going to really be buyers at the trade deadline right now?
Yeah. So no, that's a good point. And the reason why too, with the Diallo was that the story was that they want to move Lou Dort into giving him a more expanded role, and he's part of their future, whereas Diallo wasn't, and he's going to be a restricted free agent. So yeah, again, the Thunder can make this happen, but from what it looks like, if the Thunder aren't desperate to get into playoffs, which they're not, cause they're in rebuilding mode right now, well then they would pretty much want to get something from San Antonio, an asset just to move on. And so I don't think the Spurs would do that. And then of course, like I mentioned, there's some teams you can talk, I was building a Bulls trade. You can talk yourself into some teams that are kind of that haven't been in the playoffs in multiple years that are going to probably be desperate to try to get in there. So maybe I think it's one of those teams that you can try to build some different packages around, teams that are over the cap that are just trying to get into the playoffs. But again, it's really tough. Again, we'll see what happens. March 25th is that deadline. And like Ben says, how much do the Spurs want to bring in extra money for multiple years on a player? Because, they could have $48 million in cap space if they just, buy out Aldridge's deal for the remainder of this year, coming up here on past March 25th, if he's still on the team. So again, we'll kind of see what happens. He'll either get traded in these next 12 days, or he'll get bought out by the Spurs after that. And then he can sign with any team that has interest in him.
And of course, the biggest thing with Aldridge's salary coming off the books is what you also have to consider is DeMar DeRozan is coming off the books.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what's freeing up so much space for the Spurs this offseason. So even if DeMar DeRozan doesn't come back on a new deal, which I would imagine would be still a cheaper deal,
mm-hmm.
You still have a little bit of room to work with. The Spurs will have enough money to go out and sign a max guy if they can lure him to San Antonio. And low key, I read this, I can't remember who it was, but I was reading it and I was nodding my head in agreement, thinking, yes, that this does make a lot of sense. That the LaMarcus Aldridge signing, when he came to San Antonio, really kind of opened up some doors for them, saying, yeah, free agents do want to come here. Mm-hmm. This is a desirable place to be. And right now, we're trying to do LaMarcus Aldridge a solid right now. You know, yeah. We're trying to do him a favor. We will work with you. We don't have any problems. The whole Kawhi thing, that wasn't us. And it's become a more abundantly clear that that was not the Spurs. That was mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard and his camp. So I think free agents should, they got to be paying attention to these things. And hopefully they are. Hopefully they're receiving a message and hopefully they sign with the Spurs.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of what you just said there, you know, as far as buyouts that Spurs are not, you know, they've done this before. You know, they've helped out players. You know, Pau Gasol is a name that comes to mind where he was, you know, having a reduced role. He wasn't playing much in that final year at San Antonio. So they agreed to make have a buyout with him. So they bought out his contract so he could go sign with elsewhere. Same thing with Damari Carroll last year where the Spurs, you know, bought out his contract because he wasn't getting any playing time. Again, they're doing those veteran players a solid by, you know, working with them and trying to initiate a buyout if they have to. Of course, they're going to first explore the trade market, which is what they're doing here for Aldridge. So again, we'll kind of see what happens. I feel like if he does get moved in these next 12 days, it's to a team that's desperate and feels like they can give him an expanded role and he can be the difference to getting them back in the playoff picture. If he doesn't get moved, well, then we know why. And of course, you know, then we look at the buyout option. So again, we'll kind of keep an eye on what happens with Aldridge. We'll continue to monitor that on Project Spurs and continue to write any kind of rumors or things that we hear over on the site and discuss that. All right, Ben, our last topic here, let's talk about the Spurs versus the East. Now, you know, after this, like we mentioned earlier at the start of this podcast, and the Spurs really dominate against the Magic, and that's kind of been a theme so far in these eight games against the East. So overall right now, the Spurs are 7-1 against the East. Again, just 7-1, only one loss to those eight games. They've led by double digits in six of these eight games versus the East, and they've led by 20 in four of the eight games. Now, here's a way to look at that. So far, the Spurs have six 20-point leads this season. Four of them have come against the East, so you just see here that they're dominating the East. Their wins versus top eight East teams, which I couldn't believe some of these teams are in the top eight, but they are as of Saturday morning that you and I are recording. So they have wins right now against the Celtics, the Knicks, which they beat by 26, the Hornets, who they led by 13, the Hawks, which they led by 42, and then, of course, the only loss was to the Nets. But before we started recording, Ben, you mentioned that the one loss to the Nets was in overtime. You got to remember, it wasn't an easy win for the Nets there. The Spurs pushed back, and they forced them to overtime to get that one win. So, again, that's the record. Those are some of the wins against the top eight East teams. Then against the bottom seven East teams, the Spurs have defeated the Toronto Raptors, the Washington Wizards by 20-plus points, the Magic we just mentioned by 27. And so they haven't played some of the top some of the other top East teams like the Sixers, who they will play on Sunday, but Joel Embiid will be out because he just has a new injury for about 2 to 3 weeks. They have one more game, of course, against the Nets, and then they have to play the Bucks twice, and then, of course, the Miami Heat twice. And so one thing to think about is I know that, you know, all the talks have been about, you know, this second half of the schedule is going to be brutal, 40 games in 68 days, 11 back-to-backs, all these things. However, even the strength of schedule of the opponents, however, when you actually look at how well the Spurs are playing against the East, you note that they have 22 of their final 38 games are actually against the East. So more Eastern Conference games than Western Conference games. And so what does that mean? Let's just say that right now the Spurs went at their pace of 19-15. And so that would project to a 40 win record. However, if they continue to dominate the East like they've been doing, they can end up with 45 wins if they just take care of business against the East. So what do you make about that? The fact that their second half of the schedule is very favorable considering they're playing a lot of these East teams.
Yes, I think so. Obviously, the COVID pause kind of hurt them as far as having these number of back-to-back games. But the one good thing is they have a ton of lower-tier East teams they get to play. Obviously, like you mentioned, 7-1 against them already this season, with the one loss being an overtime loss to a very good team. I think it bodes well. And I'm thinking and I'm hoping that those games against the East teams maybe give them a little bit of confidence going into games against West teams. I haven't looked at the schedule that far out, so I don't know, you know, exactly, are they playing three East teams in a row and then a West team? And, you know, I haven't looked at any of that kind of stuff. But if you can play with that much confidence and you can play that well against East teams, hopefully those are kind of fluff games where they make you feel better about yourself and you say, okay, we can go in and we can beat – you know, the Suns, or we can go in and beat the Jazz, you know, next time we play them, whoever it is. And I think that's the one part where the NBA didn't hurt the Spurs as much in the scheduling. They kind of said, all right, we know we're going to have to give you a ton of back-to-backs. Maybe let's try and make it a little easier on you and give you some of these weaker teams, which I don't know if the NBA can actually say that and do that. I don't know if it's completely randomized, or, you know, with the conditions that you have to play Western Conference teams X amount of times and you have to play teams in your division X amount of times. You know, those numbers are probably different this year because there's 10 less games, but I think that that part of the scheduling was favorable for the Spurs. And I hope they take advantage, because that would probably get them up to, if you're talking about 45 wins in a 72 game season, you're probably talking about a 5 or 6 seed, I would bet.
Yeah, for sure. Again, that's it. That's it. That hole, but holds. And something that it just takes me back to is just kind of those traditional Coach Pop team trademarks. You know, one is getting back to a top 10 defense, which they've done this season so far. And then two is, you know, all those years when they, you know, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Monta Ginobili, all those traditional Coach Pop led teams, they always dominate against the East. And so this is something that, if this holds, again, it's only been 8 games so far, but if this holds and they end up having a very good record this year against the East, well, then again, it shows what that's just one of those old Spurs trademarks that they're just continuing to that's one of their advantages going into a schedule, is just having that those dominating performances against the East. So again, if they continue to take care of business like they've been doing against the East, they're gonna end up with a pretty good record here if this holds. And again, this helps them out of the fact that the schedule was grueling with the amount of games and no consecutive off days. But I mean, it could help them in the fact that with these teams that they are playing and how they've been playing so far against the East, and they still got to play some of the bad teams out there in the East, like the Cavs and some other teams out there as well. So again, we'll kind of see what's going to happen with these next 8 games. And I believe they have like 3 or 4 in a row against the East coming up. And again, they're going to play Philly on Sunday, but no Joel Embiid for that game due to a recent injury. All right. So before we wrap up, don't forget to visit projectspurs.com. Steven Anderson's continuing to provide analysis after each game. Ben, you're continuing to get ready for the draft here with your Spurs prospect watch pieces. Your latest one is on Dayron Sharpe of UNC, I believe. Can you give the Spurs cast listeners some background on him?
Absolutely. Rough and tumble big man, not afraid to mix it up. Plays for UNC, which is always one of the best rebounding teams in the country. When I was writing him up, I believe they were a top 5 defensive rebounding team, and I want to say like a top 25 offensive rebounding team. And they have 4 legitimate bigs, and I think he happens to be the best of them all. He goes after every rebound. He's a monster on that end. He can bully people. He has an NBA ready body. He doesn't have to put on any weight. He's not a guy who can go out and guard on the perimeter at all. He's very, very much strictly a 5, but he's got a little bit of post moves. He's got, you know, he's just got a nice, I like watching him because I like it when UNC comes out and they just try and punch people in the mouth, and they usually do it with him and whatever big he's playing next to. So he's a guy who can clean up the boards. And I know that the Spurs really need someone who can do that. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to write him up, and because that's what the people want. So says my polls.
Okay, so yeah, I was gonna ask you this because I haven't had you on in a while in the Spurs cast, but with Luka Samanich's emergency last few weeks after the G League bubble, and we know that the Spurs definitely want to make him a part of their future, and especially if they don't re-sign Rudy Gay in the offseason or they trade Rudy Gay this season, how much is that figuring into you, the fact that in terms of the draft prospects you're looking at, the fact that Samanich could have an expanded role going into the future here next year?
I'm counting on him having an expanded role, and I still think the Spurs need a big man, preferably one who has some offense. I mean, I know Samanich is going to provide that, but Jakob Poeltl is only going to survive so long as a defensive specialist. If you're not Rudy Gobert, you don't really get to survive as a defensive specialist in this league for too terribly long. I mean, Rudy Gobert is 7'2", and he has arms for days. So, you know, if you're not that size, you're going to have a hard time just playing defense. So I'm kind of looking at guys who could possibly expand their offensive game. A guy that comes to mind is Isaiah Jackson from Kentucky. He's been hitting the mid-range more, and he probably has the potential to move to hit shots from outside as well. And he's an athletic freak as well, but he's got to put weight on. And some of them, it kind of depends, you know. Again, it depends on what the Spurs do this offseason, because if they go out and they attract a free agent who's a big man, then, you know, kind of all of this has, you know, a lot of these guys don't make sense for them. But I'm also looking at wings, of course, because I just think that the Spurs have a ton of guards right now, and they kind of have some guards playing a little out of position. So I think if they can get a true wing guy who can make a difference for them, like a real driver, slasher, he can shoot it, I think that's a guy that they should really be looking at. And I've written up a few of those guys as well. I'd have to go back and look, but initially when I was writing, and it was looking like the Spurs might be a lottery team at one point, you know, I wrote some stuff up on Cade Cunningham and Jonathan Kuminga, who played in the G League and looked fantastic. He's going to be a top five pick. So you know, there's a lot of opportunities in this draft. There's the top five this year are much better than the top five last year. Mm-hmm. But I also think the draft as a whole is going to be deeper, and there's going to be better guys throughout the draft this year. And there are going to be some guys who maybe didn't have a great year this year because of COVID stuff. A few guys who come to mind to me are BJ Boston at Kentucky, because he's a freshman. Calipari usually has a whole summer to work with these guys. Didn't get that this year. And that entire team has looked like a bunch of guys who have never played together.
Oh, wow.
And they started to kind of get it near the end of the year, but he's a guy who really struggled shooting, but that's what he was known for in high school. And you can go back and you can look at his highlights and his tape and see that he is a good shooter. It just never clicked for him this year. So he's going to be a guy who drops into the 20s possibly, unless he just absolutely shows out in combine workouts. But, you know, there are some sneaky good guys who were top 10, you know, lottery projected guys who might fall to the Spurs now.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting to watch. And like you mentioned, you know, they're about looking for a wing in the event that DeMar, you know, ends up leaving as well in free agency, because he is an unrestricted free agent. So again, those are some things to keep an eye on, especially as the draft, you know, approaches now with the passing days. And then also make sure you visit projectspurs.com, because like I mentioned earlier, we'll continue to, with the trade deadline coming up, not just LaMarcus, but multiple players' names could be in trade rumors. So we'll continue to track that and write about those rumors that come up. All right. Thanks again to Ben for joining me here on the Spurs Cast, and also to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.